At just after 9:30 in the morning, six out of the seven friends had arrived in the redoubt.
You okay? You look like shit, Michael.
Christy and Dean were helping Michael to recover from what had been a devastatingly unpleasant jump for him, supporting the teenager as he sat on the floor with his head between his knees. They knew that Mildred was somewhere ahead of them, but had no idea where she might be. The woman had moved quickly away as soon as she realized that there was a matter transfer taking place, running until she reached the bottom of the elevator shaft. JB was picking his way carefully along the main passage on the higher level, aware that there was at least one other person in the redoubt with him, but having no suspicion at all who that might be. The sickly meld of scents was an odd mixture of the familiar and the strange. There was the strong odor of a hospital, which he remembered having noticed in another redoubt at some other time and some other place. But there was also the unforgettable and overwhelming stench of death. Set against these unseen factors was the fact that JB hadn't yet come across any sign of life in the redoubt. Ryan found that progress was becoming slower and slower. It wasn't that there was any visible threat to him, but his combat sense, honed for most of his life, screamed danger at him. The corridor had forked two or three times, but Ryan stuck to the main core, walking up a gentle incline, the weird cocktail of smells growing stronger with every step. Sec doors, all locked, stood on both sides at irregular intervals. There was an open area directly ahead of him, with what looked like seven or eight passages, and Ryan thought he could also see another map, this time relatively undefiled. He suddenly caught what sounded like the distant murmur of voices, sending him flat against the wall of the corridor alongside yet another closed door. The door opened. Two figures shambled out, both turning to their left, away from him. Less than a yard from him, Ryan could hardly believe that they hadn't spotted him. He leveled the Sig Sauer and considered blasting them down with a full metal jacket through each spine, but he kept his fingers still on the trigger, holding fire not from humanitarian concern, but from the probability that the sound of the blaster would draw others to him. The only thing that struck Ryan was that they were walking in a strange, slow way, as though they were slouching toward some distant promised land. Both carried something cradled in their arms, but Ryan hadn't been able to see what it was. They were male, he thought, with thinning, stringy hair pasted to narrow skulls, both dressed in an assortment of ragged clothes. The one on the left wore what might once have been a uniform of dirty gray-green, missing the left leg of the pants. The other had on what looked like a hospital robe, that could once have been white, but wasn't anymore. And smells floated around them, like the miasma from a stinking swamp at midnight. Ryan made the spot decision to follow them, at a cautious distance. As he eased past the open door, he glanced inside, and looked straight into the face of another of the redoubt's occupants.
Dark night!
JB knew the sound of Ryan Carter's Sig Sauer P226, as well as he knew his own heartbeat. Without a moment's hesitation, the slight figure began to sprint toward the noise of the shooting, slinging the Uzi over his shoulder and grabbing at the folding butt of the Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun. Mildred also caught the distant sound of gunfire. Not knowing what it might portend, she hesitated, licking her dry lips, and began to walk up the main passage. It was 9:39, and Christy threw the lever to close the double sec doors on the control room. Dean and Michael were standing close behind her, looking nervously around the blind bend of the winding corridor to their right.
Let's go and see what we can see.
Back in the heart of the deserted Matrans unit, the cherry red chamber door was just swinging silently shut for the sixth and last time. The torrent of nuclear missiles that defiled the Earth during the brief Holocaust did more than cull most human beings on the planet. It also slaughtered a vast percentage of all living things, animal and vegetable. Food chains were destroyed or distorted, and the fragile ecosystem was tilted and changed for the rest of eternity. Landscapes were altered. Volcanoes, long extinct, found ferocious new life, and the earthquakes raged, tilting tectonic plates that raised valleys and leveled mountains. There were lagoons where there had been deserts, and forests where there had been flat plains. Much of California slid into the Pacific, and cities fell and vanished. After four generations, the underlying effects of the nuking were still running rampant. The first mutations had been more subtle, but the deviations from what had once been the norm grew ever grosser. Plants, fish, birds, and reptiles, everything that walked or crawled or burrowed or ran or swam or flew, was altered. They became muties. Most visible as you traveled through the Deathlands were the humanoid muties. Ryan had seen most of them, fought and killed plenty of them. But he'd never come across anything quite like the creature that stood within the room, staring blankly back at him. It was the eyes that drew his attention first. The first impression was that they were melting in their watery sockets, that they'd been removed and boiled, then carelessly replaced. The pupils were almost invisible, and the whites were a muddy pink, and there seemed to be no spark of life within them. Ryan had once stared at close range into the dead eyes of a great white shark, but they had teemed with turbulent energy compared to these dull blank orbs. The skin of the face was puckered and soft, like a peach kept in a bowl of water. It was pitted with open sores, like one of the worst Radsic cases. The mouth was half open in surprise, showing only the stumps of a few crooked teeth, set among gums so rotten they were almost black. Ryan took all of this in, also absorbing the fact that the mutie had a drooping mustache, but was wearing a woman's flowered dress. There was no sign of a blaster, just a thin-bladed, bone-hilted knife stuck into the belt. There was one other thing that slowed Ryan's usual lightning reactions. The mutie was holding a human leg, severed neatly below the knee, the flesh snow-white. In the center of the calf, a ragged half-moon had been bitten out.
Hey!
The creature's hands, with filthy jagged nails, dropped the leg and began to fumble for the knife. But it was all done in ultra-slow motion, as if the mutie were trapped underwater. Ryan was aware, out of the corner of his eye, that the other two muties had begun to react to the bewildered cry. As they started to turn, he realized that one was actually in the act of biting a chunk from a woman's severed breast, while the other was hugging an armful of unidentifiable meat, the glint of bone showing amid the bloodless flesh. Ryan had once seen a vid that showed trick photography, film speeded up, with flowers blooming and dying in half a minute, and a bullet bursting a water-filled balloon, an elephant dying and then being devoured by millions of maggots, a huge jigsaw puzzle completed in a flash. The pieces of this puzzle all came together at once in his mind. The smell, the drained human flesh. This place wasn't a hospital.
It's a morgue.
He put a 9mm round through the throat of the nearest of the ghouls. Switching his aim, he chilled the other two. One of the bullets burst the severed breast apart, splattering skin and gristle into the mutie's face. Another hit it in the chest, sending it into a clumsy, staggering dance along the corridor, slapping the wall with its bloodied hands, leaving crimson smears on the concrete. Two more rounds kicked the last of the ghouls into an untidy heap on the opposite side of the passage. Rolling on its ruined face, bare feet kicking in the last spasms of death.
Shit!
Ryan knew that even the suppressed gunfire of the hand blaster would carry for miles through the vaulted sections of the redoubt. He quickly reloaded the Sig Sauer, listening to try to hear if there were any more muties coming his way. He could hear someone moving, coming toward him, but it didn't sound like an army of muties, more like a single Sec man. Ryan eased back into the side corridor, stepping carefully over the corpse, his own boots slipping in the sticky lake of spilled blood from its torn throat. Whoever came along would see the bodies, but they might figure the killer had moved on, and then Ryan could backshoot him from cover, if that was necessary. JB ran as quietly as he could toward the shooting, but part of him knew that he was going to be too late, one way or another. Ryan would have won the brief firefight, and the armorer hadn't caught the sound of any other blaster, or he would already be dead. JB saw the bodies, one of them still scraping his bare feet on the stone, with the insensate residual movements of the nearly dead, lying bloodily about 30 yards ahead of him. Ryan heard the running feet stop, and readied himself with a Sig Sauer. JB edged closer, alert for any threat. The powerful shotgun was braced at his hip, his finger relaxed on the trigger. JB noticed the door on the left, slightly ajar. He moved away quietly to the opposite side of the corridor, giving himself a better angle. Ryan sensed the intruder very close. All of his attention was focused on the main passage, making the instant decision to take the initiative. Other enemies might be closing in, and time wasted was time lost. He kicked the door open, his finger whitening, checking the movement at the last splinter of frozen time, as he recognized the crouched figure of J.B. Dix.
I nearly...
But J.B. hadn't stopped, swinging the gaping muzzle of the Smith & Wesson toward Ryan and firing. Doc Tanner came to, finding himself lying on his left side, his knees tucked up to his chin, and a thread of spittle cooling over his cheek. He knew better than to open his eyes too soon after a jump, aware of the sickening rush to the cortex that normally resulted. Doc swallowed a few times, pleased he wasn't going to throw up.
To make one jump is unfortunate, but to have to make two jumps seems like carelessness.
He waited for someone to respond, expecting some waspish dig from the cantankerous black woman doctor with the beaded dreadlocks.
Mildred?
But there was simply the vast silence, a stillness so intense that the old man was aware of the sound of the blood coursing through his skull. Then he opened his eyes and remembered. Mildred was halfway between the top of the shaft and the scene of the killings, but she heard the unmistakable thunderous roar of the big shotgun.
John!
She began to run up the slope of the corridor. Ryan slipped, losing his balance in the spilled blood, landing on top of the dead mutie. Then behind him, he heard the sudden noise of someone clattering to the floor.
Ace on the line, Ryan.
JB levered another round into the shotgun. A mutie had been able to creep up close behind Ryan without him hearing, and it had been gripping a steel-shafted hatchet in its clawed fingers. If the armorer hadn't chanced the risky passing shot, then the blade of its axe would have probably been buried in the back of Ryan's skull. The Smith & Wesson scattergun fired 8 rounds of Remington Flechettes, 20-inch-long darts in each shot. At any range over 50 yards, the spread was so great that they were of little lethal value. But the mutie had been only a dozen paces from JB, and the Flechettes had literally ripped its heart apart. As Ryan got to his feet, still holding his blaster, he noticed what lay on the floor a few steps behind the most recent mutie corpse, a severed human arm, so slender that it must have belonged to a dead child, with 3 fingers missing. JB was checking the bodies of the ghouls.
I caught the smell. Thought it was a hospital.
Ryan nodded, joining him in the main passage.
Same here. But the body parts have been emptied of blood, preserved in some way, frozen or pumped with chemicals.
This redoubt must have been used as a graveyard.
The word is morgue, John. Or perhaps mortuary would be more accurate, but certainly not a graveyard.
They both turned and saw Mildred watching them from way down the tunnel. Ryan walked toward the woman, his eye constantly on the watch for more danger.
The others with you?
Haven't seen them.
Mildred looked past him to JB.
Hello, John. Thought I might not ever see you again.
Me too, Mildred.
Ryan moved aside as they embraced, hugging each other, the woman burying her face in the man's shoulder. For several long seconds, none of them spoke.
Must be those bastard stinking chemicals. They made my eyes water.
Ryan smiled and glanced at his cron.
It's nearly 10 o'clock. I came out of the jump just after 8. There was a repeater on the wall in the control room.
8:20 for me.
8:40. Intervals of 20 minutes between each of us. You think?
Ryan was trying to work it out, and he didn't answer for a moment.
If there's a 20-minute gap, then there's 3 possibilities. Everyone's ahead of us, or everyone's behind us, or they're split up.
They could have wandered off down any of the other passages.
And run into these cannibal muties. I haven't heard any noise of a fight.
Nor me.
You didn't hear anyone behind you?
No. Found the code for the elevator on the wall and came on up.
Maybe we should go back, Ryan. See if it's been used again by Doc or Christy or someone.
I don't understand why the shooting hasn't brought some more of the muties. The noise must have carried right through this part of the redoubt.
Ryan looked at the 4 bodies and the sad, scattered remnants of human flesh.
How about going to check the elevator, Ryan?
Why not?
While Ryan and JB had been conversing, Mildred had stopped to examine the corpses, straightening and shuddering.
Bad side of the week, friends. Sickest specimens I ever saw outside the covers of Japanese horror comics.
Ryan looked down the gentle slope that would bring them back to the top of the deep shaft.
All right, close together and triple red.
Doc stepped out past the surgical gloves and gowns, hardly noticing them. He walked around the control room, passing the screen that carried Mildred's message without it registering on his consciousness. The wall clock was now showing just 1 minute shy of 10 o'clock.
I'm wandering as lonely as perdition. I seem to have mislaid what I wandered lonely as. A flower? A cloud? No, I think that it wasn't that either. But I certainly seem most damnably lonely here. You are a trained scientist, Theophilus. Exercise that rapier-keen intellect and work out just what the devil, what the Satan, what the Beelzebub, what the Hades, what... What has happened to the others? Where are they? What went wrong?
He sat at a desk close to the sec doors and looked vaguely around him.
Redoubt in Florida was about to be drowned. Something went wrong and got separated in the jump.
He ticked off the points on his bony fingers.
All ended up in different places. Damn it, I'm starting to speak in some infernal telegraphese. Now, if everyone went elsewhere, then the probability is that they all tried again. I have ended up here, wherever here happens to be. Why should they not also have ended up in this redoubt? The answer is that they might. And then again, my dear old duffer, perhaps they might not. If you wish to make a practical test of the hypothesis, then that is what you shall do. I shall boldly go where somebody else might have gone before.
Doc stood up, walked to the door, and moved the green lever to the up position. Christy, feeling an overwhelming fear of disaster, was close to the ragged edge of panic. She arrived with Michael and Dean at the closed door of the elevator, seeing a light, showing that the cage was at the top of the shaft.
Gaia! Ah! There's a coded sec lock, but it looks real triple grunge difficult.
Christy's keen mind felt as though we're trying to operate underwater.
We'll never get it. There have to be millions of combinations.
If the others were ahead, they must have gone that way. Unless they somehow got one of the side doors open.
No, they're up on top. I can feel that. But... how the fuck can we open it?
Christy!
What is it, Dean?
I don't think I ever heard you say fuck before. Wait till I tell Dad.
Christy managed a part smile that didn't get within a country mile of her narrowed emerald eyes.
You do that, Dean. When we meet him, you tell him.
What's this written here?
Michael was pointing at some faint lettering on the pale cream wall by the control panel.
Just some... No. It's the code for the elevator, Michael. Brilliant. Read it out and I'll punch it in.
Green. C for Charlie. M for Mike. 1. 9. Blue. 5. E for Echo, E for Echo, red.
Dean laid his hand against the door and grinned.
I can feel it coming!
Keep the blasters ready.
Christy suddenly began to regain control, aware that whatever danger had been threatening Ryan had passed. For the time being.